Cecilia, thank you, and thank all of you for being with us today for the Citizens Council and lunch. It's certainly an exciting time to be in Dallas. You look at the growth and what we've done over the past 30 years. It's been a great testament to the men and women in this room. And I'd like to start off with the interview today. And Katie, maybe just what's on your mind? What would you like to tell this group before I get into questions?
Sure, you bet. Well, first of all, thanks to the Dallas Citizens Council for the invitation to be here. You know, I feel really special being a Fort Worthian, being here. I was telling the group earlier today that I'm going to be honest, it's not very often that I make my way to this side of the Metroplex. Now, there's a reason for that. I'm married to a very proud Fort Worthian, Jeff Farmer, who's here today. We've been married for 30 years. He did eat lunch here. He didn't bring his lunch in a sack like Eamon Carter. I'll just tell you that. I'm also a horned frog from Fort Worth, and I get the pleasure of leading a company based out of Fort Worth. But all kidding aside, I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about all the great things that are going on in North Texas. You know, it's really because of the efforts of DCC that this region is successful. And so, you know, I think it's your commitment to inclusive economic development that is so impressive. I was thinking about how many companies can say they're as relevant, how many individuals and organizations can say they're as relevant from 1937 all the way to today. Maybe the railroad, we're 170 years old. So I think what I'd like to do is just start briefly by telling you a little bit about who we are, in case you're not familiar with that company over in Fort Worth. We are the largest Class 1 railroad in the United States. We operate primarily in the western part of the United States in three Canadian provinces, and we have destinations into and out of Mexico. We are a wholly owned subsidiary of Berkshire Hathaway, and we have about 37,000 hardworking men and women that are really proud to deliver industry-leading service that really is the backbone of the economy. You know, one of the best parts of my job, and I'm sure Bob's as well, is that as I go around the system, I literally get to talk to third and fourth generation railroaders. And so we take a lot of pride in what we do. Briefly, our business is divided into three areas. We have agricultural products, which is exactly like it sounds, the transportation of grain products. If you had a roll with lunch today, there's a good chance it moved on BNSF. We haul about a third of all of the grain that moves in this country today. We participate in emerging markets like renewable diesel, and so that's a big emerging market in our agricultural business. The second area is in our industrial products business. That's construction products, the movement of construction products, building products, coal for electricity generation. I know Jim is here. And then the third area is our consumer products business. That's the movement of finished vehicles, the movement through the ports of LA, Long Beach, the PNW of consumer durables with the ocean carriers. And then last, it's the movement with large trucking companies like UPS, FedEx, companies like Amazon and Walmart. And I'll just end by saying that the consumer products business is where we move all of the UPS and FedEx business. We will move 78 million packages between the week of Thanksgiving to Christmas Eve, and we'll move them all without one failure so that it can get to the sort facility and show up on your doorsteps. So that's a little bit about BNSF, and looking forward to the conversation.
Bob?
Well, hey, thanks to everybody for being here. I know you're really busy, and it takes a lot of effort to just take time out of your day to be here, so thank you. And Arcelia, thank you so much for the introduction. I'm rarely described as distinguished. I assume that means age and not anything else, but thank you for the introduction. I've got to start with all seriousness. I've got to start with, the elephant in the room. Southwest Airlines, and are you ready for the winter? Everybody knows that we had a tough week last December, and it was not what we stand for at Southwest Airlines, but it does not define Southwest Airlines. This is a fantastic company, and we have gone to work and worked on hundreds and hundreds of things to ensure that we are ready for more capacity in de-icing and more people and more technology and all those things. And I'm just so proud of our people. A lot of them are sitting right over here that got all of that work done. Just as an example, we had one of our best Thanksgiving operations in our history. That included de-icing and snow in Denver and de-icing and snow in Chicago. So I just want to make sure that you knew that Southwest Airlines is ready for the winter, and I am extremely proud of our people. Put that aside and look forward. I'm an eternal optimist. I like to look forward, and I'm just really proud of where we're going. There's a ton of investment at Southwest Airlines around getting back our efficiency post-pandemic, but really more than anything, investing in the customer experience. What does that mean? It basically means putting digital first. We want to be able to handle nearly every transaction with our customers, giving them the opportunity to do that via a digital platform, because that's what they want. That they want self-service. And then also continue the tradition of when you work with one of our folks, our employees, who are fantastic, it's one of the best interactions and experiences that you have ever had. We are investing heavily in the customer experience on the aircraft. We're putting in bigger bins, and we're putting in power at every single seat. And we're investing in our customers in terms of our policies. To me, that really started a very long time ago now with Bags Fly Free. And the industry was moving one way, and Southwest Airlines decided to lean to our customers and not charge for bags. One of our marketing folks at the time put it best. They said, you know, if I'm a customer, it seems reasonable that if I buy a ticket on Southwest Airlines for a trip, that I can bring my clothes along. And so I like to think that's how we think about our policies, is put yourself in the mind of the customer. And so where others are bending away from their customer, we are bending to our customers. What does that mean? We're making it easier to get tier status, not harder. We are making your Rapid Rewards points never expire. Your flight credits never expire. Now, if you are A-list or A-list preferred, on the app, on your phone and your boarding pass, you come on the aircraft and there's a digital coupon for 2 free drinks just right there for you. So we're going to continue to really invest in that digital self-service. And then last, I just like to say again, I can't praise our employees and our people enough. The people of Southwest Airlines are the key and essential difference to why we are a different kind of company. I like to say we hire folks who are just better. They're just different. And what does that mean? They come to work every day wanting to work hard and looking to serve others before they serve themselves. That is the essential difference to me at Southwest Airlines. I know everybody, we're wonderful companies here, and y'all have great employees, but we hire the best. And I'm very proud to stand up and say that. And then to the many folks in the audience that fly Southwest Airlines, thank you. I can't tell you how much we appreciate your business. We don't take it for granted. And for the very few of you that don't fly Southwest Airlines, we can meet after if you'd like.
Bob, thank you.
Thank you.
So you both work for legendary companies, legendary founders. So what's it like, Katie? Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, what was it like working for these great men?
Yeah, I agree 1,000% as far as legendary leaders. You know, I have had the sincere privilege to get to watch Warren lead. And I think that what I have taken away from getting to know Warren over the last several years is that he really leads by example and models the way. I don't know that I've ever worked with a leader that has more integrity or greater integrity than Warren Buffett. You know, if you've never been to a Berkshire annual shareholders meeting, you need to go for several reasons. But one of the things that Warren does every year before the start of the meeting is he plays a video. And in the video, every year, there's a clip. And it's a clip of Warren testifying in front of the House subcommittee in the 90s with the Solomon financial crisis. And Warren says that what I tell my managers, that's what he calls the CEOs of his company, what I tell my managers is that I will be understanding if you lose money, but I will be ruthless if you lose a shred of our name and our reputation. And I can tell you that is very clear for us day in and day out as managers, that that's how he expects us to run our companies. And that's really why I believe it was such an easy transition for us. When Berkshire acquired BNSF, our values were very similar. I mean, Warren truly believes in finding companies that he doesn't need to turn around, but finding good companies that have good business models, and then really empowering those managers to think long-term, which is a great thing for us at BNSF. When you're a company that's making 50 and 100-year investment in assets, to have an owner that thinks beyond the next quarter is critically important. Now, don't get me wrong. He's very interested in what we do on a quarterly basis. And you know, Charlie was very much that way. I think most of you know that we lost a great leader on Tuesday of this week. Charlie Munger, who was the vice chair of Berkshire Hathaway, passed away at the age of 99. He was going to be 100 at the start of the year. You know, I was really fortunate to get to know Charlie as well over the last couple of years. We had Charlie on the train in March of this year. And he loves being on the train. They both love the train. He loved being on the train, talking to our employees. And he said, would you sit next to me at the dinner the night before the shareholders meeting? And I feel so fortunate to have gotten to know Charlie. Both Charlie and Warren, and now Greg Abel, who is the vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway and will ultimately succeed Warren. All three of those gentlemen really truly believe that to have success, you have to have growth. And to have growth, you have to invest. And that's just such a wonderful ownership and a wonderful culture to be a part of. It's really truly the way that we've been able to think about things differently. I'll tell you one last story about Warren because it's one of my favorite stories. When I was first named CEO, he said, I'd like you to come and talk to the Berkshire board. So I said, sure. I said, well, so I started thinking about what I need to prepare. And I said to Warren, I said, do I need to put together a PowerPoint presentation? What would you like me to touch on? Because I'm thinking, you know, the board at that time was comprised of Bill Gates, and this wasn't going to be a pushover kind of conversation, right? And Warren said to me, oh, Katie, you don't need to prepare anything. Which basically meant I had to prepare for everything, right? He said, let's do this, Katie. He said, I want you to think about BNSF and what you want to tell the Berkshire board. I want you to think about the company as if it was your family business. And you've had this family business for 100 years, and I want you to tell us about what you need to do to protect that business for the next 100 years. And I thought, sure. And sure enough, at the Berkshire board meeting, we sat up there for an hour, and we had a conversation about what do you need to do to protect this business, what do you need to do to invest in the United States, what do you need to do to invest in the U.S. supply chain, and how can we help? And when you have a culture and a leader like that, it's a pretty great place to work.
Outstanding. Thank you. So, Herb Kelleher.
You know, we've been really blessed. You think about the leaders we've had a chance to work with, and that's just unusual. But, yeah, I've had a chance to work with Herb, with Colleen, with Gary. And I met Herb on the day that I started at Southwest Airlines in 1988. And met him in a hallway and, you know, hey, what do you do? Welcome to Southwest. He's got a cigarette. And if you ever talk to Herb, he talks about this close, which means the cigarette is migrating right in front of your eyeballs. And the more intense it gets, the closer he gets. But I had a five-minute conversation with Herb, and he asked me about my wife, who's sitting right here, and our kids and what I did and everything. And two things happened. I came to Southwest Airlines not knowing a lot. It was a job to get me back to Dallas. And in 5 minutes with Herb, I walked away feeling like I had joined the most special place on the planet, and it was a crusade to bring air travel to Americans and not just a job in 5 minutes. And he looked me in the eye, and I walked away feeling in my heart that way. And I saw him again 6 months later for the first time in that gap. And he remembered my name, what I did, our family members are by name, and he asked me. And I walked away learning about what Southwest Airlines meant and how to treat your people. Colleen Barrett, I had a chance to work for quite a while. And many of you know Colleen. I had a chance to have dinner with her a couple weeks ago, and she... nicest lady on the planet, but ruthless when it comes to customer service. She ingrained in me the need to treat your customers right and to be in the detail and to take every opportunity to understand what your customers were thinking, which means I get a customer email, I read every single one that I get, good and bad, because she ingrained in me the need to treat your customers right, live by the golden rule, and understand what was going on out there. Gary, I owe my career to Gary Kelly, because I've had the blessing of having 15 jobs at Southwest, applied for one, and every other one, Gary just moved me, which meant that he allowed me to go into a department that I really had no experience, and he just said, I trust that you can do it, and gave me those opportunities. And that I wouldn't be sitting here in this chair today but for that. But I learned from him the value of going deep and understanding the business and being steadfast and sticking to your goals and your plans and steadfast in staying optimistic, believing in the business, knowing the business, and driving forward. And all of those leaders impacted the way to my style. You can't try to copy the iconic leaders you follow. It's impossible. I can't be Herb, I can't be Gary, I can't be Colleen. And a big learning for me as I've led and taken on this job is you need to be yourself. You need to learn, but then you need to be yourself. It's hard enough to be a leader without trying to be a leader and be like someone else. I had a good friend who always told me, be yourself because everybody else is already taken. I like that one. And so for my own style, just real quickly, I love teams. I love people. Our folks get on me sometimes because I'll wander the building and talk to people all day if I could do that. But they're shaking their heads out there. I see. But I love people. I love forming teams. And what does that mean? I love when a team becomes high trust, because you can get so much more done at such a greater pace, which means the team has to be willing to be vulnerable with each other, which means I have to go first and demonstrate that for them. But I love it when the team comes together, and I love it when the team then can move at pace and not take things personally and just charge forward as one unit. In my own style, I guess, I love people. I'm not a... you're never going to find me yelling and screaming or those kinds of things. It's not my style. It's not our Southwest Airlines style. But I do go very deep and detailed. I like a lot of data and information, which probably means for our team, I annoy them to death with questions. I just ask a lot of questions for my own style.
We hear a lot about your culture. And so I heard during lunch about this Halloween party and your Halloween contest, right?
Yeah.
And so Grant was the judge. Now, I'm curious. Gary used to be Kiss, right? Wasn't that his Halloween outfit?
Gary's been a lot of things.
So what's your Halloween outfit?
A lot of Gary's involved women. He turned into Snow White and different, some of these crazy characters. It was pretty fun. But if you're going to believe, I was a Ninja Turtle. And we had a professional makeup. Wow. Halloween is a big deal at Southwest Airlines. We had 9,500 people come to the headquarters to see Halloween. So departments do all kinds of things and skits, and it's just a blast. But I had to be airbrushed green, which meant green in my ears and in my hair and everywhere. And
so do you compete? Are you allowed to compete as the boss?
I felt like I competed.
Okay.
That airbrushing, but
I'm gonna put you in the spot. Anymore.
But it's a hallmark of the culture. It's a lot of fun.
It is a fun.
People
place.
Get together and have a blast. Grant was gracious enough to be a judge, and I think you loved it. It was a lot of fun for the day. We call it the hardest working day of the year because by about 3 o'clock you're beat. But no, a lot of fun.
Katie, back to business. So if you look at the growth of North Texas. This is one of the great growth regions in the nation. We've had 375 people a day moving into Dallas-Fort Worth. We just passed 8 million people. By 2050, we're supposed to have 13 to 16 million people. And a lot of that growth is because of being Santa Fe and Southwest Airlines. And you're foundational to what we do. Can you go through kind of what your impact on North Texas, and just, again, you're B2B. Everybody knows Southwest. Not many people know the incentive. Matter of fact, no one really knows about your intermodal yard. And if you wonder why so many warehouses are being built in this part of the nation today, a lot of it's due to you in this intermodal yard you've built. So few people know about it. I told Kelvin, I said, we're going to put you in the helicopter and show it to you because you need to see it. Can you describe just your impact on North Texas?
Sure. I think it's a collective effort on the impact we're having in North Texas, and things are going really, really well, obviously. You know, I read somewhere that of the top five metroplexes, I think Dallas-Fort Worth is fourth now, and we grew faster than anybody else last year. So we're doing a lot of things right, and DCC is certainly a big part of that. You know, as I think about, the impact that we can have, and I don't want to be too self-serving with Bob and I up here, but we'll go ahead. And I think one of the biggest strengths in Dallas-Fort Worth is that it's a transportation hub. We have an excellent interstate system. We have two of the largest airlines that are headquartered here. We have the largest railroad in the country that are headquartered here. And that's what is driving investment, and that's what's driving really the support of North Texas. It's one thing to make investment. BNSF is certainly doing that. We invested about $1.5 billion over the last 3 years just in the state of Texas. But it's really about the partnerships. It's about the partnerships that we have. I see Mike Berry here, and it's about the partnership that we have, for example, out at Alliance. Alliance for us is the first place that we tried our logistics park concept. We're the only ones in the industry that have this model. And we partnered with Hillwood back in 1993. And every year since then, we've expanded at Alliance, every single year. And the concept was really a pretty straightforward, simple one. It's take a intermodal facility, work with developers to acquire the land adjacent to that, and then attract businesses to that anchor, that hub. And it was a perfect fit with Hillwood and at Alliance. And basically, what it does is it allows customers to have a sustainable solution. It allows customers to reduce their supply chain expenses. And the concept has worked. Since 1993, we now have 134,000 feet of track just at that facility in Alliance. We have the capacity to be able to store 10,000 containers and trailers out there, and we will do 1.3 million units through Alliance. And my conversations with Mike are always about, do you have more property? What else can we do out there? But we've literally attracted the Amazons of the world, General Electric, Wabtec, JCPenney was the first customer out there. But it's having those relationships that allow us to continue to grow. You know, one of the things that is so beneficial about that kind of relationship is not just the capacity, but it's bringing that private investment here, bringing multiple companies to North Texas. But then as a network business like BNSF is, we're making investments, as you can imagine, across the country. We just announced we're going to build a close to $2 billion facility in Barstow, California. If you don't know where that is, it's in the middle of the Mojave Desert. It's 100 miles from north of LA and Long Beach. So go back to the challenges we had during the supply chain, with the supply chain in the last couple of years. This is, as I mentioned, a Berkshire BNSF bet on the future and the competitiveness of this country and its supply chain. We're going to build that facility out there, and the next time we hopefully won't have ocean carriers that are stacking up freight out on the West Coast, they'll be able to bring it through the ports of LA and Long Beach, evacuate it, move it up to a facility very much like the facility that we have here at Alliance in Barstow, California. Now, the beauty of that is that keeps this country competitive, keeps goods coming in from Asia, and those goods will get on a train in Barstow, California, come through the ports of LA and Long Beach, go through Barstow, California, and wind up here at Logistics Park Alliance. So it's impactful, and because of the partnerships that we established in 1993 and have continued to grow, it continues to make Dallas-Fort Worth really a gateway for a lot of the products that want to move across this country.
And I think for this audience, people don't realize how new intermodalism is. And you pioneered intermodalism with J.B. Hunt in the truck-train relationship, which we now all take for granted.
Absolutely. Yeah, they are actually, it's interesting, a lot of people don't know that as a railroad, our largest customer is a trucking company. They're a big partner with ours out at Alliance. And in fact, we introduced two brand new services with them in the last couple of weeks. We thought, you know, there are 7 million trucks moving on the highway in lanes that make sense to be moving intermodally. So what we know we have to do is we have to create a different type of product. And so we have a commitment with J.B. Hunt to offer a truck-like product. It'll be guaranteed 95% on time. It will be priced slightly below single driver over the road truck service. And so we launched that product. It's called Quantum, which harkens back to the start of intermodal, which was called Quantum, when Mr. Hunt and the Santa Fe Railroad started intermodal. So we're excited about that. And then lastly, we're going to start a brand new product in January 1st, for movement into and out of Mexico, really targeting taking trucks off the highway on that I-35 corridor. I'm sure those of you that drive up and down I-35 think that's a good idea. And so that will come with BNSF, the largest railroad in the country, J.B. Hunt, the largest intermodal carrier in the country, with the largest Mexican railroad with Ferromex Grupo Mexico out of Mexico. Product will originate in Mexico, and then will land in right here at Alliance, Texas. So we're excited about the growth, which is why, Mike, if you're here, I need more space out at Alliance. So
that's a great. We can take care of it.
Can you take care of that for me, all right?
So, Bob, how do you keep up with the growth? I mean, you've hinted in the newspaper, maybe you have to grow outside of Love Field to other airports. Can you take us through that?
Well, as Katie said, I mean, the Metroplex is growing. And people are flocking to Texas and to the Metroplex. And if you don't have access to adequate transportation, it is very hard to grow, especially a business. I think we will move upwards of 8 to 10 million folks through Love Field in a year. And Love Field is constrained. We love Love Field, by the way. I mean, we built Love Field at Southwest Airlines. It's a beautiful facility. It served us very well, but it is constrained. We have 18 of 20 gates, and those 20 gates are constrained. We are committed to continuing to serve the Metroplex as it grows. We could put more flights at Love Field today, as an example. A key component of the Wright Amendment changes in 2025, which will allow Southwest Airlines to look at airports outside of Love Field without having to give up sort of a gate for a gate. And so we've been looking. As Love Field is constrained, the only way to continue to serve the Metroplex is to look at other airports and facilities. We've been doing that. We have a modest request into DFW. As they look at building a new terminal, I think that terminal could come online roughly in the 2027 timeframe. But the main thing I want you to hear is that we love Love Field and we love Dallas, but we are constrained there, one. And number two, we are committed to serving the Metroplex as the Metroplex continues to grow.
Well, with these growth rates, I mean, if you form that Warren Buffett concept to look out 100 years, 100 years, we'll have 33 million people here. By 2100, 33 million people here. And so we're going to have to grow airport capacity. And I saw Senator Hutchison, and she's here. We probably should thank Kay Bailey. She's the one that led the effort to open up Love Field in the Wright Amendment. So, Kay, thank you for that leadership. And for the newer people in the room, we got to remember these great leaders we've had. They gave us the ability to continue to grow.
That's right.
And so as this region grows, we'll continue to have the challenges. And so I think, you know, what can we do as a business community to help both of you? You're critical to the economy. We want to help you grow. How do we help you?
Right. You know, as I think about where BNSF is going over the next 5-10 years, we're going to focus on three critical areas. It's going to be around safety. It's the number one thing I'm sure. Just as in Bob's business, you know, we work in a really unforgiving environment, and so safety is really important for us. We're going to focus on service. It's a table stakes for us and our customers, important to the U.S. economy. And then we're going to focus on efficiency and productivity. All of those things for us are going to require automation, technology. And as a federally regulated industry, sometimes implementation of innovation and technology can be challenging. So I think that, you know, we have examples. I'll tell you briefly. We have a, an automated train inspection innovation that we've been piloting for the last 3 years. It's a really neat technology that, as opposed to having a visual inspection to look for defects in a track, it takes an autonomous geometry car and pulls it behind a locomotive at train speed and looks for defects in the track, which reduce the number of derailments, critical incidents, things that you don't want having to have happen in communities or with your employees or your customers. We ran a pilot. We applied to our safety regulator, ran a pilot for several years, and saw that we could reduce defects by 82%. So we applied to extend this across our system. We were turned down. So, you know, I'm very confident we'll find our way through it, but here's something that we should be implementing right now for our customers, for our communities, and for the safety of our railroad. So what can we do? I think that you all are important business leaders, and your voices are important to not only the state of Texas, but at the federal government level. So I tell that story only because I know I'm not alone, that many of us are facing unbalanced regulation, things that are slowing down innovation, technology, and frankly, safety. And so what I would ask you to do is to make your voices heard. I think we'll have growing pains, obviously, as we bring that many people to Dallas-Fort Worth. But, boy, with what we've accomplished over the last several years, I really like our chances. So we can't let things like, you know, not thoughtful regulation, we need to not let that slow us down. So I think that's the things we need to focus on from our perspective.
Bob? You know, I think it's, I agree completely. And I think it's one of those things, I think it's simple, and it's not simple. And because it's wonderful, growth is a wonderful problem. It sure beats, you know, the alternative shrinking in an area. And Dallas is growing, and the Metroplex is growing. But it brings with it several things that if we don't stay focused on them, it makes it very difficult. So to me, it's really basic. It is stay focused on the infrastructure required. As the Metroplex grows, people move in, that's housing, that's roads, it's access to utilities and water and transportation, and just making sure that we stay ahead of those infrastructure needs, because if you get behind, it just takes so long to recover, and it ultimately then stifles the growth and can stop the growth. And Dallas, I think, is doing a wonderful job there, but stay in front of the infrastructure requirements. Number two, continue to think about education and really building the workforce, and sometimes building the workforce in a way that's non-traditional. I'm convinced, coming out of the pandemic, as we all did, there was a lot of focus on supply chain, how difficult supply chain recovery was. I'm convinced that recovering the labor force was actually more impactful than recovering the supply chain. And finding people, finding the skills, getting them hired, it was just a daunting task for all of us. And we're staffed. We're in a great place at Southwest Airlines. I'm very proud of that. But I am convinced that labor constraint and skilled labor, access to skilled labor, is going to be a constraint for a very long time. So continue to focus on education and continue to focus on maybe non-traditional pathways, certification programs, where you can produce skilled resources in a shorter period of time. I had a chance to spend time with, we've got a group at Southwest Airlines that is basically a boot camp to create technology resources. And these are folks that, three of them, the class that I was in yesterday, have come from the ramp. They worked in an airport, they loaded bags, they had technical aptitude, and now they are being trained in 9 months to do things like programming and cybersecurity. They are great at it, number one, and number two, it's life-changing for them in terms of their careers. But back to the question, focus on developing, accessing labor, and then focus on developing skilled labor in a way that it can come to market, because if not, our growth is going to be constrained by not being able to get people. And then third, just for this whole room, and I think you just do a fantastic job at it here in Dallas now, is stay aligned on the goals and the things that are important. Because if this group can stay aligned, groups like the DCC can stay aligned on what's important and what we're doing about it, it just makes everything so much easier. If we have competing goals and politics and all those things that get in the way of cities and companies, it just makes everything so much harder. So the more we can stay aligned around the goals, what we're doing, the timelines, the commitments to making progress, Dallas is unstoppable in my mind.
Well, Bob and Katie, thank you very much. Thank you for what you do for our community, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.